Welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. This is Chad Young. Pete Ball is here with me, and we're sorry we missed a week. We're back with you. It is June now. We're recording this on June 9th. The episode should be out into your ears on June 10th. I mean, I feel like I've been saying this for a month now, but we've gone from it's no longer early to now it feels like it's starting to get late. If you want to make a move, if you want to make your run, if you're going to go make that trade to get yourself over the top, you better act soon, huh?
Oh yeah, you better act soon. I made a lot of trades this week. I know that's the focus of this episode. And the beauty about keeper leagues, man, is at this point in your season, if you feel like you're out of it, we'll start playing for next year and start making those trades, because your expensive keepers are, their window to trade them is beginning to close. So maximize that value.
Yeah, and I'm finding myself in my auto new leagues this year in some really difficult spots. And so I've got some interesting decisions to make. I mean, if you look at my, auto new has that dashboard page. And if you go look at that right now, my teams are 7th, 4th, 5th, 4th, 9th, 2nd, and 6th, which is just like every single one of those teams with the team in 2nd and the two teams in 4th are probably pretty clear buyers. The team in 9th is probably a pretty clear sell, although I've refused to admit it so far. But all those other teams are right in that, I don't know. Do I want to go for it? Do I not want to go for it? And some of those teams have been, some of those are teams I thought were good. And so they've been very disappointing. And so now there's this, go back and look at it and figure out. This is, I think, the hardest thing this time of year is, if a team is bad and you don't know why it's bad, or you didn't expect, you expected it to be good. Going back and looking at it and being honest with yourself about what went right, what went wrong, what could theoretically maybe turn around, because maybe it is a good team, right? If you're in sixth place and your team is actually good and just everything has gone wrong so far, but the future looks bright, you may want to wait it out. If everything's gone wrong, but you were relying on, Zach Allen, who's hurt, on Blake Snell to come back strong and he hasn't, on Ronald Acuna Jr., who obviously is not going to help you anymore. Now you have to make some real tough decisions about is this going to turn around? Could it turn around or not? So
you just named
something we have to talk about.
You just named three of the players on that team that I decided to sell to you with or on.
There you go.
Yeah. All three of those on that roster.
But that's the thing. If you had a roster with those three guys, as long as you had a decent roster around them, you probably expected that to be a contender.
Oh yeah.
And so I think sometimes I have a tendency to think this team was going to contend. I'm not bailing on it now. Sometimes you should. Sometimes that's the right call. So, yeah. But before we get into all that trade talk, we got to talk jersey numbers. Then we have a new tradition here in the Keeper Cut. I don't know if it counts as a tradition if we just made it up and we haven't done it yet. But a new tradition on the Keeper Cut podcast that we'll introduce soon. But first, jersey number 39. This is episode 139 of the Keeper Cup podcast. I don't know. Anyone jump out at you from this list?
No. I mean, literally nobody. Me paying attention to baseball, my baseball life, Kevin Kiermaier, 11 years, so many of those with the Rays, Platinum Glover, incredible fielder. He definitely sticks out. But otherwise, no.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at this list, the number of players who both wore the jersey number 39 for more than, let's say, 5 years, and accrued more than, let's say, 20 WAR, and played in our lifetimes is low. I mean,
very low.
Right. So here's the full list of players who meet that criteria. And I'm going to go with my lifetime, a little bit longer than yours. 5+ years, played during my lifetime, 20 or more WAR. I'm going to start at the bottom and work my way up. Aaron Harang, Roberto Kelly, Bob Tewksbury, Mike Witt. This guy, Bob Knepper. He played in my lifetime. I was totally aware of him. Eric Hansen. Eric Hansen having 22 career WAR is not a thing I thought we'd be talking about, but yeah, he does. Mike Krukow, Mike Greenwell. There's a Red Sox for you. He's a Red Sox who probably predates your fan interest, but He is a Red Sox. Oh, nope. He didn't make it to our lifetimes. Kiermaier, who you mentioned. Dave Parker. And I think that's it.
Yeah.
So it's not been a real popular number. Parker is, you know, by war, the best, I guess, to have ever worn this number in our lifetimes. But that's a, you know, he had 19 years, like Kiermaier still has time to catch him. So maybe it is Kiermaier. I don't know.
Parker did not play during my lifetime.
Oh my
His
God,
last
he's
season.
So young.
His last season was 91. I was born in 92.
Yeah. Well, and I do think it is probably worth at least mentioning, even though he did not play in our lifetimes, that Roy Campanella wore this number for 10 years with the Dodgers. I think he is probably actually the best player associated with this number in baseball history, especially given the fact that he was excluded from baseball for some of his prime years. And so from that perspective, I think, you know, he came over to the Dodgers in 48 as a 26-year-old. He'd be way high up this list. He'd been playing in the Negro League since he was 15.
And so
I think Campanella probably deserves the recognition for this episode. Sorry, Kevin Kiermaier. We're going to go with someone who predates us, but deserves the recognition, especially in light of, you know, there was that decision. MLB finally, like, officially moved all Negro League stats into their records. And so there's been some changes in the all-time leaders and stuff. And I'm really excited about that. I'm glad they did it. It feels like the right thing. And so, you know, let's give Campanella some due as part of that transition.
Works for me.
So with that, our new tradition on the show is we want to go back and look over, you know, things that have happened over the last week and just talk about, like, we're coming up with a better name for this, but for now we're calling it the Player of the Week. And the idea here is it's not necessarily the single best player. It's not necessarily the single most interesting player. It's just someone who jumped out at each of us and deserves some attention on the show because they've just been doing something unique. So why don't you go first with yours, Pete? Who is your first ever, the inaugural Keeper Cut Player of the Week?
Yeah, so mine's super lame. I didn't, like, dig too deep for this. It's because I just recently traded for this player in my home league. I sent a huge offer, was able to get him. And that's Fernando Tatis Jr. So Fernando Tatis Jr. looked like he was going to be the best player in fantasy for years. Then he had the suspension. He had the shoulder surgery. And I've been kind of, like, waiting for him to build his way back up. And you look at the underlying numbers last two seasons, especially this year, it's like he's there, but the results hadn't quite been there. And that might be a little harsh. He's still, like, a top three or top five outfielder in fantasy so far this season. But this week, his first week on my team, and I didn't have him for all of these games, but had him for quite a few. He was absolutely unbelievable. He hit .464. It was a WRC plus over these seven games of .246, OPS of 1195. The more interesting stuff, his average exit velocity this week over his last seven games, that's three against Arizona, three against LA, and one against Kansas City, we're recording on June 9th, was 96.2 miles an hour. He is hitting the absolute snot out of the ball. And a lot of that has, even though he only had one home run, he's been hitting it in the air a lot. So not the most exciting pick. Fernando Tatis Jr. was good the last week, and we expect him to be extremely good, but I still think he's got that number one overall player upside, and I'm hoping he begins to get that back. And I think this week was a great step in that direction.
I'm with you. I hope that this is the start of something. I have Tatis in Auto New League One. That is one of those teams where I thought I had a really good team, but I'm sort of in the middle of the pack. I'm currently in that league sitting in seventh. Yeah, I'm in seventh. My offense in that league, I think I have either the best or second best offense. So it's a, you know, 4x4 roto. So I have 10 points for runs, 11 for home runs, 11 for on base percentage, 11 for slugging. I have 3 points for strikeouts. Now, part of that is I'm sort of low-ish in innings, so I could catch up on that. But I have 3 points in strikeouts and one each for home runs for nine, ERA, and whip.
Ugh.
And I'm not particularly close in any of those. Home run per nine isn't terrible. I'm at 1.22. The team ahead of me is 1.18. But ERA, is that right? Yeah, it is. In ERA, I'm at 4.47. The team ahead of me is at 4.06. In WHIP, I am 1.32. The team ahead of me is 1.25. Now, the good thing here is if I had a really good, not even a great, just a good second half of the season in those categories, I could get to middle of the pack, and that would be enough to move me into the money. The problem is that, like, I have to really decide if I'm able to do that. Bringing this back to Tatis, I have a $49 Fernando Tatis Jr. I also have a $60 Juan Soto and a $36 Christian Yelich. Those are sort of my best trade pieces. And so what I'm stuck with is, do I want to trade those guys? And I don't really have enough. Like, my offense is not going to hold up to losing those guys. So I could theoretically maybe trade one for a pitcher and see if that helps. Or my alternative here is, my pitchers on this team are Carlos Rodon, who's been pretty good. Pretty good is probably selling a trade. He's been very good. Pablo Lopez, who's been horrific, but I still believe is a good pitcher. Kodai Senga, who we don't know when he's going to be back. Brian Bayo, who has been good at times, bad at times. I don't know what to make of him. Cutter Crawford, who's been good. Gavin Williams, who's on rehab assignment. Sandy Alcantara is a stash. Robert Gasser, super excited that I was able to add him. Now he looks like he's probably done for the year. Kyle Bradish, who's been great, but only has 7 starts. Chris Paddock, who I'm barely using. Spencer Arrighetti, who I just picked up and has been very good lately. Andrew Haney, who I've been able to use occasionally to get good results, and he has just over a 4 ERA, not bad. Mitchell Parker, who's been very good. James Paxton and Tyler McGill, who's been good lately. If Lopez turns it around, Williams comes back, and Senga eventually pitches, plus now I get a full second half of Bradish instead of the 7 starts I have so far, that could be enough to turn that pitching around. So I've been watching what Tatis is doing closely because he's been only okay. And he opens up, if he can be great in the second half, he does open up the option for me to trade, let's say, Yelich or Soto, or him for that matter, and get a pitcher back, and my offense could survive the loss of what it got from Tatis so far, right? And I think that's the thing, is like, I can't look at this and like, oh, giving up Tatis is like really going to hurt my offense. Like, yeah, it will, but he's only been okay. On the season, he's a 357 slugging, 358 slugging, 459 slugging, 359.8. All right, I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to say these statistics. Through 68 games, a little over, a third, less than half of the season, 40% of the season, something like that. 44 runs, 11 home runs, 358 on base, 459 slugging. Those are all good stats. But like, as an example, I have Wyatt Langford on this team. Wyatt Langford matching those stats in the second half, despite how bad he's been in the first half, doesn't seem totally crazy. Max Kepler, perhaps, although he's been really cold lately. Like, I have some guys who theoretically could step in and replace that version of Tatis. Alternately, I think if Tatis takes off, he could replace what I would expect to get from Yelich in the second half. So, like, I have some options here to maybe make a trade. I'm just trying to figure out what I want to do, because I could just trade all three of those outfielders and reset for next year. Or I could wait on this pitching and see if this pitching comes together. So I'm excited to hear, because I honestly, like, I hadn't really noticed that Tatis had a strong week, but he's been great lately. And so, yeah, I probably need to wait it out a little bit and maybe make a different trade to try to add a pitcher somewhere.
Still just 25, and I mean, we don't need to go down the Pablo Lopez rabbit hole, but I can't figure out what's wrong, because everything looks fine, and yet the results have been terrible. So I still think there are better days ahead for Pablo Lopez, which would give me some hope that my pitching can come back a little bit, and maybe you finish on that podium.
Yeah, and that is the league. We have payouts for the top 4 finishers, and so I don't necessarily need to be, the best team in the league. I just need to like move up from 7th to 4th. That would be worth it. But yeah, I mean, he's been, I don't know, it's been a weird season for him. I think if you
super weird,
like a lot of the underlying numbers look totally fine. And if you go back, I think he did this last year too, right? He got off to a weird start. Wasn't as bad, but he had an ERA of 4 or higher in all of March, April, May, and June. And then pulled it down to 3.71 in July and 2.0 in August before 3.68 in September. So, you know, he sort of did this last year. This is more extreme than anything we saw last year, but he sort of did this last year. And so I think I'm just going to be patient with him at least, but I don't know. At some point, I'm probably the reality is I'm probably going to give it another month with this team, which also may be enough time for Tatis to put together a Tatis-like month so that if I do end up needing to trade, I'm trading Tatis at peak value. Because, just as an example here, I was talking trade with Tatis, and the offer I got was Max Meyer.
No way.
Right. It's a $3 Max Meyer. I like Max Meyer.
Sure, but he's but struggling sort of in the minors.
Yeah. Then I had made an offer of my Tatis back in sort of mid-May. My Tatis for a $5 Jason Dominguez and a $6 Junior Caminero, who were both on the block from that team. He turned that down pretty much outright. The Meyer offer came from another team where I had said I wanted one of Logan Gilbert or Joe Ryan as part of a deal. And they basically said no, but they could have done Max Meyer and Brown, which I think I was talking about Ben Brown, but they also have Hunter Brown. I'm not really sure which, but it was like, no, neither Ben Brown nor Hunter Brown with Max Meyer is getting Tatis done.
No, here. Not happening.
So it's interesting that that's where his trade value is. It's good to see him turning it around. We'll have to see if he can continue to do that. I didn't really expect us to talk that long about our player of the week or for it to lead to a conversation about my pitching. Let's talk about Fernando Tatis and Chad's pitching in League One. But my player of the week is a guy who I've been unable, I think, so far to add. And there's some fab coming up that may be an opportunity to change that. But over the last week, Elliot Ramos has put up a 358 WRC plus. That's really good. Now, there is some BAPIP inflation in there. He's got a 583 BAPIP. But he's walking 20% of the time, 20.7% of the time, and striking out 20.7% of the time. He's probably not going to continue walking at that rate, but if that's starting to show real improvement in his strikeout rate, that would be fantastic. He's hitting for good power. He has a 591 ISO. He's at 4 home runs in his last 7 games. And there's really no reason that the Giants shouldn't just keep giving him playing time. And he was a guy who his prospect star has gone up and down, we'll say. He looked really good as a 19-year-old in high A in 2019. Struggled when promoted to double A that year, but it was only 100 plate appearances, and he was a 19-year-old in double A. Like, yeah, he struggled. That's fine. Then he lost 2020. He was one of the guys who didn't play at all. And when he came back, he's 21. He's still in double A. He's fine. Like a 333 WOBA is not the end of the world, but it's not, setting the world on fire either. Got a promotion to triple A anyways and sort of struggled there. In 2022, he's back in triple A and he's even worse. He gets a cup of coffee in MLB. It's not good. 2023, he starts to hit in triple A. Now he puts up 263 plate appearances, 401 WOBA. That's as a 23-year-old in triple A. So now he's back on track. Gets a shot in MLB last year and was just atrocious in 60 plate appearances. Struck out 33% of the time. Was not hitting for power. Nothing looked good. Went back to AAA this year and very similar to what he did last year. 409 WOBA. Everything looks good. The strikeout rate is a little bit higher than you'd like at 27.6. But there's real improvement there too. And now he's come up and he's just hitting. And WOBA is 421 this year. The XWOBA 381. He's got an almost 60% hard hit rate, 57.6% hard hit rate. He has a 13.6% barrel rate, which seems really high, but he had a 13.9% even in his bad performance last year. This is a guy who is able to barrel the ball. His max EV of 109.3 this year, he had a 112.7 last year. Given the small number, like the small total sample size, that 112 is probably an accurate reflection of what he's capable of. His average exit velocity is way up. Like, a lot of stuff looks really good here. And if that strikeout rate is starting to come down, that could be the game changer for him. And I just gave you like 5 years of his history, which makes it, you know, at least for me, I feel like I've been watching him forever. He's 24. Like, he's still young. So if he sort of figured things out in AAA last year, it didn't quite translate to MLB, and this is the year it's coming together, that's not a totally shocking turn of events for a, you know, last year 23, now 24-year-old. He turns 25 in September. Like, yeah, I think I'm pretty excited about what Ramos is capable of. Now, like I said, he's not going to walk 20% of the time moving forward. He's not going to have a 560 BABIP or whatever it was I said going forward. So, like, there's some regression coming for Ramos, but there's lots of room for regression with him still being a useful fantasy player. It's probably worth noting that he's got only one stolen base so far this year in MLB. He had two in the minors. But he was a guy who was showing like 15, maybe even 20 stolen base speed at times in the minors. That's gone down as he's gone up. So it's probably more like a 10-ish stolen base kind of guy. But you'll take that. Like, he'll chip that in your 5x5 league. So Ramos is a guy who has jumped up. He's sort of been on my radar. He's off my radar. He was on my radar, but not as a guy I would want to actually pick up. And now he's probably on the list of guys I'm going to try to grab in the coming days, where he's still available.
Yeah, I mean, that's an organization that's starved for homegrown hitting talent. We've seen it not work out with Luciano. We've seen it not work out as Luis Matos gets sent back down. And it looks like they might have something here with Ramos. And honestly, I mean, the strikeout rate obviously raises an eyebrow, and you're right to bring it up, but I think he can get away with the high strikeout rate. Like, some players just can, and when you lift the ball as much as Ramos does, when you hit the ball, most importantly, when you hit the ball as hard as he does, that 94-mile-an-hour exit velocity that he's averaging this year, like, you can get away with a higher strikeout rate. Before Judge figured out his strikeout rate, he was still a super valuable player because of how hard he hit the ball. Even Stanton can find himself with some fantasy relevance ever since he fell off, just because of how hard he hits the ball. And so I'm not comparing Ramos to two former MVPs in a like leading way, suggesting that this is like the stash of the century, but he can get away with a high strikeout rate, even if that doesn't come down, because of how hard he hits the ball. I hate the ballpark that he's in. I don't think the lineup around him is very good at all, but you know what? He's lifting the ball. He's hitting it hard. He has a runway in front of him to kind of run with this, and he's hot. So if you picked him up for a dollar in Ott New, or you added him off free agency and he's a free keeper, at this point in time, you have to be pretty excited, because you're probably thinking this guy's going to be on my roster for a while.
Yeah. And I think to get that strikeout rate point, the focus here is not like, oh, he's at a 20% strikeout rate, maybe he can maintain that. It's maybe instead of 33%, he can be 25%. Like, maybe that's the improvement. Like, this is a good week, but the improvement is legitimately getting him down to a 25-ish percent strikeout rate. And then, like you said, it's not that he's Aaron Judge, right? But he is the type of guy who has the ability. Ramos is the type of guy who has the ability to put up good numbers despite a strikeout rate, because he can take a walk and because he can hit for power. And if he can maintain that, then there's something real interesting here. So yeah, I'm excited about him, and I'm excited about our new tradition. I'm looking forward to picking names each week and talking about some of these guys, but we have now reached our first break. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll shift over to talking about trade season. All right. Welcome back. We are here at the Keeper Cup podcast. This is Chad Young, joined by Pete Ball. We just talked about our players of the week. Now we're going to talk a little bit about trades. We sort of teased this at the beginning, talking about, you know, we've reached that point of the year where it's time to let's do this in a child-friendly way. Poop or get off the pot. You have to make those decisions. Are you going to go for it? Are you going to sell? make those calls and make some moves. And Pete, you and I both started to do that. And we've made some trades. And I think it probably makes sense to go through some of those trades, what those situations were, talk about some of these players and get a sense of what we're doing, why we're doing it, and also debate some of these players, because there are some fun names showing up in these trades. So, Pete, I want to start with one of yours. I mean, goodness, this has like just a pile of legitimate stars going both directions. I don't even know where to begin with this. Like, usually there's a trade and you're like, oh, this is a J-Rod trade, or this is a J-Rod, Vlad, Luis Castillo, Bo Bichette. Like, there's just like, and I haven't even read all the names yet. So let's just go through the full trade here. Did you give up Rodriguez, or did you get Rodriguez?
I received Julio in this trade.
Okay. So you received Julio Rodriguez, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Cal Raleigh, and AJ Smith-Shawver, and you gave up Luis Castillo, Jared Jones, Bo Bichette, and Spencer Torkelson. That is just, I don't know where to start, so I'll let you start.
Sure. So here's the context. This is a 16-team dynasty. So every player's keeper value is equal. I think that's important context here, because Jared Jones probably raises an eyebrow like, oh, I bet that's a free player. And it is, but it's dynasty. They're all valued the same. So I'm going to give you this is a weekly league. So I can only start five starting pitchers a week unless I have a SPARP. Here are the injured pitchers on my dynasty roster. Shane McClanahan, Spencer Strider, Bobby Miller, Blake Snell, Alec Manoa, Brandon Woodruff. Those are the injured pitchers on my roster. The healthy ones before this trade: Grayson Rodriguez, Luis Castillo, Jared Jones, Reese Olson, Nick Lodolo, Michael King, Garrett Crochet. And I have Mason Miller and Pete Fairbanks as my pair of relievers there. So the pitching was absolutely stacked, and this season has gone extremely poorly for me so far. So I'm in selling mode, and I figure a lot of those injured names will be healthy, some of them by the end of the season, but most of them by the start of next year. And because I can only start five of them, I had plenty of depth to deal from. So I wanted to improve my hitting. We only start one catcher, one first baseman, one second baseman, one third baseman, one shortstop, three outfielders, and one utility. And there's a very long bench to pull players from. I have Mookie Betts, who for this season has some flexibility. That's obviously going to go away next year. It's a fine offense. Otherwise, I have Devers. I have Anthony Volpe to fill in for Bo Bichette, who's leaving. But now I get some serious upgrades where I'm going to go from Jonathan Aranda, who got sent back down, and Spencer Torkelson, who got sent down, to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., which I think is a nice little upgrade there. My catcher's been Connor Wong, who the underlying numbers don't support it. He's been pretty strong this year, but I don't view him as a long-term answer at catcher, whereas Cal Raleigh does have some fantasy appeal, and he'll solve some issues there. And then there's the massive upgrade of going from an outfield of Duran, Betts, and Soler to an outfield of Duran, Betts, and Julio Rodriguez. I do have other pieces like Andy Paez, Roman Anthony eventually, but I wanted some offensive upgrades. Offense has been so hard to come by this season. I feel like going forward, because this year's kind of a wash for me, my pitching is still probably the best in the league when fully healthy, despite trading away not just Luis Castillo, but also Jared Jones. And I tremendously improved my offense because honestly, at this point, and I can end it at this because I know I've given you a lot to work with here, I think Anthony Volpe might be better than Bo Bichette. Like, is that a crazy thing to say, at least for fantasy and probably overall? So I feel like I didn't even get hurt there by giving up Bo Bichette. So very happy with this deal in my 16-team head-to-head dynasty.
So but was Volpe on your bench?
He was my utility player.
So who's your middle in? Do you have middle infield? Like, what was your full middle infield? I'm trying to understand who, because like Volpe didn't replace Bichette. Someone else, he was already in your lineup, so somebody else replaced Bichette, right?
Yeah, so my lineup this week is Connor Wong, Jonathan Aranda, it locked and he got sent down, Andrés Giménez, Rafael Devers, Bo Bichette, Jaron Duran, Mookie Betts, Jorge Soler, and Anthony Volpe. Volpe will go now to shortstop, obviously.
So you don't have a middle infield? There's no middle infield spot?
No, it's one spot per position. I do have Eloy. I have Noelvi Marte. So I've good options eventually for that util spot that I just didn't need Bo Bichette.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That does make sense. Yeah, I mean, this is, wow, it's quite a deal for sure. There's a lot going on there. I think the thing that stands out to me is we're about to talk about another trade that you made. We'll go to one that you and I made with each other, in which you also gave up Luis Castillo. And Castillo is a guy who I know you've traditionally been very high on. So seeing you move him twice is surprising to me. So what's up with Castillo? Is that just like he's just highly valued and a good piece to use in trades if you think you can make a good trade with him? Or are you seeing something you're concerned about? Has your value on him taken a downturn?
To the second thing, no. I mean, honestly, probably the opposite. I think he's shown he's one of the most consistent aces in fantasy baseball. I was worried at the beginning of the season, and then it was like, you know what? It's probably cold weather that he's been dealing with, because he's otherwise pretty much been nails. You know, we'll get to our trade in a second, but he's pretty expensive. You know, he was like $32 or something like that. So he's probably still a keeper at that price, especially with inflation. But like, not a slam dunk. I have to have this player on my team. It's not like I had like an $11 Luis Castillo. And in this particular league, again, my pitching is just crazy. Like the fact that I could lose Luis Castillo and still have a rotation next year of McClanahan, Strider, Bobby Miller, Grayson Rodriguez, Nick Lodolo, Garrett Crochet. I mean, I just named six. I can only start five, and there are a lot of other names I have there. I just viewed him as super expendable and the oldest of that bunch by, I think, a pretty significant margin. So totally fine with moving him. I'm not cooling on Luis Castillo. If I was in contention, he's the type of pitcher I'm looking to buy. But I'm not in either of those leagues. So happy to sell him.
Got it. That makes sense. And I did buy him. So we'll talk about the other side of that in a minute. But the one other name in here I want to talk quickly about is Jared Jones. So we're recording this Sunday. I believe Jones will be on the mound in a matter of hours. I'm pretty sure he is starting.
Yep. Against
today.
Bailey Ober.
Against Minnesota Bailey Ober.
Yep.
However, Jones, after being just incredible to start the season, has been less than incredible for a while now. His last five starts, including having, by the way, and I don't mean to downplay this, he shut down the Dodgers in his last start. Six strikeouts, three hits, three walks over six innings, no runs allowed. Like, so let's not, I don't want to, you know, make it sound like he's just been a disaster. Like, that's an incredible start. But his last five starts, he has under eight strikeouts per nine, over three walks per nine. His FIP is 4.44, ERA is 4.13, XFIP 4.45. So he's been a mid-fours ERA type guy for over a month now. His start before that was very good, but it was against the Rockies in Pittsburgh, and so I don't know how much I value that. And the start before that was against the Giants in San Francisco and wasn't that good. Three strikeouts, one walk over five innings, three runs on six hits, including two home runs. Like, it hasn't been, you know, he was a hot talk in spring training. There was a lot of hype around him. He came out of the door like gangbusters, was just destroying everybody. And it's been sort of meh for a while now. Are you, like, is he a guy that we should all be shopping? Like, if you've got him on your roster, is now the time to move?
I'm not going to go that far yet. I still really like the player. I look at, in this particular trade, the context here, like, he's first of all, one of the only healthy pitchers I had. And if it was him or Grayson Rodriguez, I'm still taking Grayson Rodriguez, and maybe that's a good comp there. He's still averaging over 97 miles an hour in the fastball. The swing strike rate is still over 16%. So I think the skills are still there. I think it's reasonable to assume he's going to have some bumps. But he may not be that slam dunk ace that maybe folks, you know, kind of put the cart before the horse there and thought he was going to be. But he's still a player I'd happily buy on. In my long-term formats, I'm not sure he'd be my first target in leagues where I'm in contention. But to be fair to this manager, he really, really needed pitching. And most importantly, he got Luis Castillo. So it's not a bad thing that he's also getting Jared Jones long term. But just looking at Jared Jones, no, again, fastball velocity still great. Swing strike rate still crazy. I think he's just going to experience bumps, and we should expect that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I am shopping him a little bit, especially in head-to-head leagues, because I do think there's a chance that Pittsburgh shuts him down at some point. And so in my head-to-head leagues, I'm trying to shop him for a couple of reasons. One, I do think there's some risk that we're in a downturn that's going to make the overall numbers look a lot worse at some point in the next few weeks. And also because by the time August and September roll around, I'm not sure I can count on him in the head-to-head playoffs. And I don't want to be in a position where I'm stuck. Like, I don't want to be in a position where I'm stuck deciding, do I sit on a dead roster spot through the playoffs in order to keep this guy? Because he's going to be a keeper. I think, like, he has established that already at what he cost in draft season. He's already established himself as a keeper. Even if things sort of go sideways the rest of the way, I'm still going to be in on him. So I want to make that move now if I can, so that I'm selling him at still peak or close to peak value. If he has a good start today, I'll probably get really aggressive about like getting an offer done in my head to head leagues. In my season long leagues, I'm a little less concerned about it.
I think that's a really good call. If he pitches well today and you're listening to this episode and you're in contention, I think he is a pretty good sell high candidate. 69 in a third innings pitch going into today's start. Last year, he pitched 126 in a third. So we can assume, I don't know, 140, 150 innings pitch. But I agree with you. I don't think they're going to let him go a lot further than that.
No, and I think that we talk a lot about like, oh, he threw X number last year, he can make the jump this year. He threw those innings last year in the minors. Like, it's a different sure. thing.
Different stress. Yep.
And I don't know that we can assume that the Pirates will look at that and think, yeah, we should have him go 150. I think given the way the game is going these days, I think if they have him in a position to throw 150 next year, they'll feel pretty good about that. Yeah. And that means he only really has to get to like 110, 120 this year. Now, I don't know. I'm not saying they're going to shut him down at 120 innings. I have no idea. I haven't heard any rumors of that. We've seen so many teams when they're not in contention, shutting down young starting pitchers who rather than wasting bullets. And I don't blame them. And the reality is if he stays healthy and gets into September without having been shut down, then he is going to be pushing that 150 plus innings. And that's when I'm really going to need him in my head-to-head leagues. So I'm not worried about an innings limit with him let's put it this way. I'm not worried about an innings limit. That's not the concern. The concern is that he won't throw enough innings. It's that in a head-to-head league, he won't throw the innings that matter. That's the concern. So let's jump to our next trade to talk about. This is one that you and I made with each other, so we can talk about both sides of this. So start with some context here. This is in the Podcasters Auto New League. In this league, Pete, you are in eighth place. Yeah, you're in eighth. I'm only a few spots ahead of you. I moved up. I'm in fourth. I was in fifth like an hour ago. Whatever's going on in that game in London must be doing well for me. Kyle Schwarber, 1,000 at bat, 1,000 average, and a run scored. Alec Bohm has a hit in 3 plate appearances, and that apparently moved me up half a point. But anyways, that's not the point. The point is that I'm in fourth. I won this league last year. It is not super realistic that I'm going to win it this year. I'm pretty far back, but I want to make a run here. But this is also one of my OPL teams. So for those not familiar with the Auto New Prestige League, it's a side competition, for lack of a better way to put it, that any team that finishes in the top half of an Auto New League can enter. When you enter, you're put into a pool of, there were 240 teams to start. And then there's cuts every few weeks. So it was 6 weeks in, there was a cut down to 170 teams. We're now about another few days to cut down to 100 teams. A month later, right around the All-Star break, we'll cut down to 32 teams who will go into a knockout round of head-to-head matchups. This is all based on Fangraphs points, best ball scoring. And so in this format with your 40-man roster, it's really important to have full rosters of healthy, active major league players. And this year, I've been sort of taking a strategy of being comfortable with having some injured and minor league players on my rosters through the first couple rounds. But as we get down to crunch time here, if I want to be in that top 32 at the end of the third round, I need to have full rosters going into that third round. And so I'm making some aggressive trades to try to make that happen. That's sort of the context for this trade. So Pete, very much in sell mode. I am in sort of buy mode, but more importantly, buy for OPL mode. And so I had guys who are hurt, who I needed to make moves with. That included a $14 Tristan Casas and a $3 Carey Carpenter. I also, in this deal, gave up a $1 Garrett Crochet that I don't feel nearly as good about. Again, with the exception of sort of like Jones, I do think there's a possibility that at some point this year he gets shut down, throws fewer innings, moved to the bullpen for a while. And so from an OPL perspective, I'm a little concerned about that. But really, that was just Pete asked for him, and I couldn't talk him out of including him in the deal because I like Crochet and I would have rather kept him. I am getting a $41 Rafi Devers, $32 Luis Castillo, we just talked about, and a $3 Cutter Crawford, which did help sort of ease the pain of losing Crochet, especially in this 5x5 format, because Crochet is not going to pile up the wins with that team around him. So I did feel a little better about that. The other thing I got in this deal was $12 in cap space, which matters because I only had $1 of cap space. And part of getting ready for this OPL deadline is I'm going to have to make some cuts and adds. I'm going to have to cut some weak players and some injured players and maybe some minor league players to get guys who can actually help me. And that means I need some cash. So getting that cash really helped. I'm going to be using that this week to make some moves. But Pete, I mean, this feels like it was a pretty easy trade for both of us.
Yeah, it was this team and my TGFBI, I felt so good about and just got hammered and hammered and hammered. Like, first week of the season, I traded Jared Jones for Mike Trout and thought I made this great deal to improve my outfield. And obviously, we saw how that worked out. I had Ronald Acuna Jr., I had Blake Snell, I have Zach Gallen. I thought I lost maybe one or two other pitchers there. So it's just been a disaster. And I had to finally rip off the Band-Aid. Very excited to get Casas at an affordable price at $14. I think when he does come back in early July, he's going to show me enough that he's obviously a slam dunk keeper at that price. I know you're a big fan of Carey Carpenter, so I was surprised to see that you included him. But I know he's kind of out long term right now, $3, especially with how bad outfield has been. I'm happy to get that. But the crown jewel for me was Garrett Crochet. I just think he's nasty. I always thought he was going to be good. He's always thrown so hard, and he's getting that opportunity now. It looked like things were falling apart, and he just got right back on the horse, and he's pitching like an ace again this season. So it was an easy decision for me once I decided, like, this just isn't going to happen. When you lose a $72, I think it was, Ronald Acuna Jr., which means what, he was pretty much like 20% of my entire team. And he already wasn't performing to the level that we wanted. And I lose him for the season. At some point, man, you just got to take the hint and sell. So I moved one of my, or probably my single biggest trade chip in Luis Castillo, or maybe it's the Yordan Alvarez, we'll see. But I was happy with the return. So see, it's better to make those decisions now and get the haul that you like. Cause if Casas came back and he was hitting well, who knows if you make that trade.
Yeah. And that's the thing is I the next round of OPL will go from basically June 13th through the All-Star break. So right, basically a month. Casas could be back as soon as June 21st, I think, but there's been some comments lately that suggest that is probably not quite on the table. And so losing him for half of that window was just, especially with the possibility that it's the whole window and longer, like it was the right time to make a move. Carpenter is probably not going to play at all during that window. That's the only reason I'm considering trading him where I'm considering trading him. And I do like Carpenter. It's painful having to move him. This was just a case where sometimes you have to give up players you like to get players you need. And that's an okay trade to make. Devers has been great. Castillo is still, I think, you know, one of the top pitchers in the game. This league also, I've got 2 points out of ERA. I'm doing better. I'm doing great in whip. I have the third best whip and the second worst ERA. It's a weird combination. My strikeouts have been good, but I'm gonna have to keep them up to maintain my lead there. I could use some more wins. Castillo should help with that. Crawford might be able to help with that. So the pitching boost is going to be a needed one. I've got some weak pitchers I need to get rid of as well. So that'll help with that, because I'll use that to hopefully add some bats. Devers sliding in at third base. I've had Alec Bohm at third base, who's obviously been great, but I feel pretty good about sliding Bohm into sort of a most of the time at util, sometimes benched for somebody else, depending on matchups kind of guy. As good as he's been, I'm not sure I really believe that Alec Bohm is going to keep up what he's been doing. And honestly, to be honest, like, he's already not keeping that up. Like, his March, April was, you know, incredible. A 190 WRC plus. He had a 366 average, 438 OBP, 598 slugging. May was much worse than that. It was an 82 WRC plus. Everything came down. I think he's better than his May, but not as good as his March and April. So we'll see what that looks like going forward. But I think this is a case where, by making this move when I did, I'm basically taking what's been pretty much elite third base production for me so far and ensuring it continues the rest of the season. So that is where I ended up there. And that's why I feel pretty good about that move. So that's how that trade sort of worked out, why it's coming together. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got some more trades to discuss. All right, welcome back. I do want to talk about my other OPL trades I've made, and I've made two more of them. So I'm going to sort of throw them in together here and see what you think, because there's some similarities with these trades. Again, I am giving up trying to move injured players and players who are not producing for me, or players in the minors. So in one of these, in League 13, which is the Fangraph staff league that you and I both play in, I again traded Cassis and Carpenter. And this one I got, it was an $11 Cassis, a $4 Carpenter. I got a $45 Yordan Alvarez. And then in League 670, which is my other OPL league, all three of these teams, by the way, are extremely likely to make this cut and have a realistic shot of making the knockout rounds, which is why I'm making these moves. The other one I gave up, again, a $3 Carey Carpenter. I also gave up a $1 Michael Massey and $4 Kyle Manzardo. I got an $11 Dansby Swanson and a $42 Vlad Guerrero Jr. So again, Vlad and Swanson for Massey, Carpenter, and Manzardo. And then Alvarez for Cassis and Carpenter. The analysis on this is almost exactly what we just talked about with the deal we just talked about. So there's not a lot new to say, but any thoughts on any of the guys I got or gave in those deals?
No, I think Yordan right now is a great buy. He's kind of like Tatis in that, like, you can't say he's disappointed. He's been awesome, but we know he has another gear, and very recently it looks like he's kicking it into that other gear. He's actually very similar to Tatis in that hyper-specific way, where over the last week or so, I'm confident he could have also been my player of the week if I went that route. He's been unbelievable since June started. He already has 4 home runs in the month of June. It's only June 9th. And he's got, over that stretch, 5 multi-hit games as well. So he's been unbelievable. Here's the stat. How many times do you think Yordan Alvarez has struck out in June?
It's June 9th. They probably played like 8 games. I mean, if I was actually guessing, I would say like 7 or 8, but I'm guessing you're going to tell me it's like 4.
He has struck out once in June, so he is absolutely locked in. He is a player worth trading for. So the fact that you're trading two guys that are out, especially for that OPL window, to get players like Yordan Alvarez, who in my mind is absolutely capable of doing judge-like things, which means he's absolutely capable of being like arguably the top player in fantasy, he's absolutely worth trading for.
Yeah. And I, you know, the other deal Vlad and Swanson are both guys who I think will be better the rest of the way than they've been so far. Carpenter, again, we've talked about, like, I like Carpenter, but I have no problem giving him up there. Massey and Manzardo, who we haven't talked about. Manzardo has been odd because from a fantasy perspective, he doesn't seem like he's been very good. And his overall line is not very good, but he has really shown some stuff. And maybe this is just me being a Guardians fan. But he went through a stretch after, you know, first of all, he got called up. He was like 0 for 7 in no time with 5 strikeouts. Like, he was just awful. And then he went through a stretch of 51 plate appearances with a 116 WRC plus. The strikeout rate was just 23.5. And now he's gone cold again. But that cold streak's been a week, a little over a week. And it hasn't come with a lot of strikeouts. It's come with a really low BABIP, 200. It's only a 20% strikeout rate over that stretch. Like, what we've seen from him is the strikeout rate's improved. The plate discipline's improved. He's making smarter decisions. He is not right now getting the results over the last week, but he was for a couple weeks before that. And so I think Manzardo is, I think he's getting close to turning a corner. We will see how much leash he gets. I think it'll be a decent amount. I don't know. I mean, even that stretch that's been bad for a week, his last two games that he's played were Saturday and Thursday. He didn't play Friday. But in those games, he had a ball 96.7 miles per hour. He had a single and a double. He had a walk. He's only had one strikeout over that stretch. Like, again, it's a cut, you know, it's only two games. I'm like, I'm parsing his season down to nothing. But my point is more that, like, even in this bad stretch, it's not like he's been a complete zero. He's done some good stuff recently. I think there's some good things coming. But in the situation I was in with this team, it wasn't a difficult decision to decide that he was worth giving up to upgrade to Vlad. And to get Swanson, who I like I said, I think will have a better second half of the year. Michael Massey is an interesting one because he's been really good this year. He's got a 351 WOBA on the season. That's with a 289 BABIP, so it's not super BABIP inflated. His home run for fly ball rate is 16.7. That's not crazy inflated. What he's done is he's gotten more aggressive at the plate and has been putting the ball in play instead of striking out. 14.5% strikeout rate. He was at 21.5% last year. I really, really like what I'm seeing from Massey. The concern there, again, was he is hurt. And the reports on him, it's like it's a back issue. And he's like, he's visiting a specialist and he's getting injections. And the reports have been like, it's been weird because it's been one of those, like, we'll see how he responds to treatment, where you feel like you could wake up one morning and they might be like, he's in the lineup today, or his season might be over. And I'm not really sure which direction it's going to go. And so where that offer came up and I could move him, I did. I also have him in the league 13, and Niv and I have been hesitant to trade him because we'd like to see what the news is. But the trade value on him isn't real high either. People aren't really like banging down the door for him. I guess where I'm really going with this is, despite the fact that I traded him here, I think he's an interesting guy to buy right now if you can get him at a low price.
Well, he fits the Chad Young profile. He's a guy who consistently hits the ball in the air, and his pull rate is over 50% for his career.
Yeah,
and that's consistent. That's every season that he's played. 50.4 in 2022, 51.8 last season, and he's at 50.5% pull rate this year. So, I mean, it's a good profile. It's just, how well does that play if you're not hitting it super hard at Kauffman? That might be what's kind of tripped him up so far. He also never takes a walk. If my life depended on Michael Massey taking a walk, I might die. So, otherwise, he is a super interesting player, kind of a complete profile. It's just gotta come together. And you're right, he's been good this year. 835 OPS.
So we got time for, I think, one more trade. Pete, you've put a couple others in the chat. Why don't you pick which one you would rather discuss?
Well, the Brandon Lau for Cabrian Hayes one is boring. So let's do the Shane Boz. So I traded a $7 Shane Boz and a $16 O'Neill Cruz for a $38 Austin Riley in a loan to cover the difference. This is in the keeper cut Otten Listener League, which I'm in three Otten leagues. I enjoy all three of them. I thought this team was going to be the one that like struggled. And it started off that way because in League 13, I started out 8-0 and now I'm 9-9 because of Mike Trout and Trey Turner and Zach Gallen and on and on and on. But this is the one that like has somehow been tearing it up for me. I'm currently in first place. I'm a hair above you. So I got 76.5 and you're at 74. And so I wanted to take advantage of this. We're deep enough into the season where I think this team is going to be a contender. And I thought Austin Riley would be an interesting buy low. The real reason I wanted to do this, though, is not that I don't believe in O'Neill Cruz anymore, because I still love O'Neill Cruz. I mean, I have O'Neill Cruz like everywhere. But I added Nick Gonzalez off waivers, and like he was just tearing it up on my bench. Like I had to get this guy into the lineup. And even with him in my lineup now, I've still got Mason Wynn on the bench, who's also been kind of tearing it up. So I had a pretty fortunate shortstop situation. I had a lot of flexibility at third base because I think it was Ha-Seong Kim covering it for me. Ke'Bryan Hayes, I now have on the bench, who's hitting pretty well. So it's just a fortunate situation. I'm hoping Austin Riley will start doing Austin Riley type things. The fact that he only has three home runs this year is incredibly disturbing, but I think we all expect that to turn around. And he hopefully gives me more than what O'Neill Cruz would have given me. And it's worth mentioning in 4x4, there's no stolen bases. So that aspect of O'Neill Cruz's game doesn't matter so much. Yeah. And it does count runs, and O'Neill Cruz doesn't always bat towards the top of that terrible lineup. So he's kind of limited in this format, whereas Austin Riley, even in a down year, is probably still really valuable in this format. Boz had been struggling in the minors, though I still love that player. I have enough young pitching. This is my favorite league because I have a $1 Cy Young Tanner Houck. So I didn't really need the long-term cheap pitching. I feel like I'm in a pretty good spot with pitching, and it just the deal felt right. And it was obviously with a team that was selling. I think that one was with my brother, actually. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I like that. I think you are giving up a lot of long-term value, but it's Riley. I mean, Riley's got to be better the rest of the way, right?
I hope so, or this team's in some trouble. I just gave up a lot to get him.
Yeah, I can't see him.
Three home runs. It's crazy.
Being better.
Ronald Acuna still has more home runs than Austin Riley, and we know how bad he was playing. Well, how relative to his usual goodness he was playing.
Right. Yeah, I get it. I think it's like I'm looking at Riley right now to try to figure out, like, do I see anything that seems like a smoking gun for why he's struggling? And I don't know.
Can I throw out some third baseman to you, and you can tell me rest of season who you would rather have?
Sure.
Well, so let's start with some obvious ones. Gunnar Henderson or Austin Riley?
I think it's a hard one because before the season, I would have probably said, well, it depends on the format. But I probably would have said Riley in a lot of formats, Gunnar in others. But okay. I at this point, I don't think I can assume that. So I would have said Gunnar in 5x5 because he's going to steal 10, 15 bases, and that's going to make a big difference. But in almost any other format where stolen bases aren't a factor, I would have gone Riley. But I don't think at this point I can just assume that Riley's going to be Riley the rest of the way, in part because I can't tell why he's not Riley now. It's like, there's not something I can look at and be like, oh, well, once he fixes this, everything will be fine. And so I guess it's Gunnar.
I mean, the difference in home runs right now is 17 home runs. I mean, there's nothing Gunnar's doing wrong. His Statcast page is just one giant tomato. His strikeout rate is 24%, but I think he's the best third baseman in fantasy now.
I think he has been. I just think if you look at the next 80 games or whatever it is, 90 games that are left, let's call it 90 games that they each have, something like that. I think Riley hitting 20 to 25 home runs over 90 games is like, very much in his normal range of outcomes for a normal Austin Riley season. Like he's a 40 home run, almost 40 home run hitter. Whereas I think if you told me that over the second half of the season, Gunnar's going to hit more like 12 to 15, that wouldn't seem crazy to me. So that's where I just don't know. Like right now, Gunnar Henderson has a 32.3% home run per fly ball rate. Like he's been great. I don't know that I buy he's going to have a 30% home run per fly ball rate the rest of the way. And so I think that home run, so I think his home run output is going to come down. I don't even think that's not like some weird controversial statement. He's played 63 games and he has 20 home runs. He's not going to hit 50 this year. That home run output's going to come down. Riley's should go up, but really what this comes down to is I'm just not willing to bank on it. So yeah, it's Gunner.
So then Jose Ramirez or Austin Riley?
Well, I take Jose, but and now there's some bias in there, but I mean, I think that's another one where, again, before the season, I might've said Riley in certain formats where the speed doesn't matter and things like that. But again, I just can't, you can't assume that Riley is going to be back to being Riley as much as I would like to be able to assume that. It's just not a given. And Ramirez is good.
Yeah, very good. I agree. I mean, I would interpret this as if we were drafting right now. And if we're drafting right now, would you take Rafael Devers or Austin Riley?
Devers.
And now I don't know if this is where it gets interesting, because there's a ton of names that, like, well, we got one more to get out of the way. And I don't know, maybe you feel differently. Ellie De La Cruz or Austin Riley?
Riley.
Okay. Now in 4x4.
I play so much less 5x5. And so we were talking about a 4x4 league. And so I'm in a 4x4 mindset. In 5x5, Ellie is a difference maker in stolen bases. I get that. He's been really not good for an extended period of time again. Right. And I think this is going to be, this is the Ellie De La Cruz experience, is he's going to go through these stretches where he just does nothing but strike out and steal bases.
So then maybe Riley is still like the fourth, third baseman, I guess. I mean, because at this point, the position gets kind of weird. If we were just looking at the ESPN player rater, like the top three are Henderson, Ramirez, Ellie De La Cruz. One word answers: Riley or Michael Garcia?
Riley.
Riley or Ha-Seong Kim?
For third base, Riley.
And then we get Devers, and then Riley, or this one's interesting, Jordan Westberg.
Riley.
Okay. I'm not saying I'm taking Westberg over Riley, but that's an interesting conversation to me. We're going to end on this, on the third guy here. First one, Spencer Steer or Austin Riley?
Riley.
Yeah, I'm definitely Riley there. Riley or like Alec Steer. Home?
Riley.
And Riley or Isak Paredes?
That's actually really tough, because they provide very similar things, at least in theory.
And one has been a hell of a lot better than the other.
Yeah. You know, I think Paredes, a lot of places, is like in Otto New, he is still middle infield eligible. So that makes a big difference. But if I'm talking just for third base, I guess this really comes down to a question of like, how much do you think Paredes can maintain what he's doing? Because he's putting up, you know, not the 35 to 40 homers you expect from Riley, but he hit 30 last year. He's on pace to be around 30 again this year. And he's getting on base in a 373 clip. Like, and his home run per fly ball rate is down. So there's some upside, I think, still available to Paredes. Again, we could talk about the fact that his ex-WOBA is way lower than his WOBA and how it's because he pulls the ball. And I can go through that speech again. You already gave it for Michael Massey, so I don't need to. I think I would still bet on Riley being better the rest of the way.
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Like, Riley has been so bad, and I don't mind saying that. Like, he's been legitimately bad, but I think he still ranks pretty much where, like, the names might be a little different, but he's still basically a top five third baseman, even playing this poorly. So I think the advantage you get there buying low on Austin Riley is pretty good. And part of that does have to do with the fact that Machado and Arenado have fallen off the face of the earth. And Alex Bregman, although he's gotten hot lately, like really hot lately since May, like 28th, he's been scorching with five home runs since that over that time period. Like, he still had a terrible season. So Austin Riley is still basically top five third baseman. It's just weird saying that because he's been so bad.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's been terrible, but I don't know what else you would. I don't know who else you would take over him. I think that those, like, right, all those questions you asked me, I still trust him to turn things around, I think.
So if you can get Austin Riley for your Jordan Westberg, like, I don't know. I think I'm making that trade. Yeah, I think I'm making that trade.
Yeah,
which feels crazy, but I think I would do that.
All right. Well, I think we have talked as much about Austin Riley as we possibly can. So we're going to call it a day.
Covered
all. Yeah, third base. What a mess. But with that, hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and we will be back with you next week.